Coming to you from Jonesboro, Tennessee, at the International Storytelling Center, we'd like to welcome you to Storytown Radio, Jonesboro's original storytelling radio show.
I'm your host, Lori Almstead, and we are back with a great season of stories.
That's right, Lori. Telling the stories of our own people from right here in the Appalachian region. Each month, we go into the hills and hollers and collect the stories we use on this show.
We take those old stories and bring them to life right here on the stage at the International Storytelling Center. I guess what we do every show really fits in well with this month's theme. What's new, used, or recycled?
You know, Lori, you might look at Jonesboro, a town established in 1779, and think, well, nothing new to be found there.
But oh no, not in this town. Sure, our main street has buildings going back to the 1700s, like our wonderful Chester Inn next door, which you'll hear more about later on in the show. And we've got buildings from the 1800s, 1900s, and well, right up to the 21st century. But Jonesboro is Tennessee's ultimate recycling story. We've continuously put our buildings into new use generation after generation.
The town is alive. The people, the ideas, the streets, the buildings. And while the history of the place is preserved, the original spirit of Jonesboro inhabits them all.
We've also been collecting stories at the newly restored McKinney Center, located in the historic Booker T. Washington School, a building that has been brought into new use.
Before we go any further, though, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsors.
We'd like to thank the Tennessee Arts Commission for their generous support of our program. We'd also like to thank those wild women of Jonesboro.
And we certainly appreciate their supporting the important stories of Northeast Tennessee.
We'd like to thank Nancy Hope and Odie Major for sponsoring the program.
And finally, we'd like to thank Main Street Cafe and Catering for sponsoring us this season.
And yes, of course, as always, the makers of Parsley. Yes, parsley, that smooth, easygoing flavor that enhances every meal. Sprinkle it on or garnish a dish.
It just tastes better with parsley.
Moms, do mornings come too early for you? Well, then frozen toast is the answer. From the freezer to the toaster, what could be simpler than frozen toast? Hit it, kids. We are here tonight talking about what's new, used, and recycled. And who would know more about what's been used and recycled right here in our own town than Angie Fellers Mason from the Heritage Alliance of Northeast Tennessee and Southwest Virginia. Anne, why don't you come on up here and give us another installment of our favorite segment, Ask the Historian.
Thanks, Lori. Life cycle. Every living creature has one, from the tallest person to the smallest caterpillar, and so on. Buildings, too, have life cycles. They are built for a purpose. Sometimes they change owners many times. Sometimes their purpose changes. And sometimes they are deemed purposeless and torn down. In 1905, when Ray Lodge No. 47 of Free and Accepted Masons built their new lodge at 129 East Main Street, they probably never entertained the idea that 100-some years later, it would be selling candy as a lollipop shop. If you visited the current location of Kaylee's in the 1930s, instead of clothes, you could have bought a car. And if you stopped at the Boone Street Market in the 1990s, you'd be stopping to fill your car at the Exxon station. The buildings in Jonesboro have lived multiple lives, and it helps that Jonesboro is a historic district. Historic preservation can greatly increase the longevity of a structure. The greenest building is always an old building that finds a new purpose. Of course, Jonesboro wasn't always a historic district, and even before those days, there were people in town who worked to keep Jonesboro's buildings standing. The Chester Inn, Jonesboro's oldest commercial building, has had a very long life cycle indeed. Built circa 1797, Dr. Chester obtained permission to keep a public house in 1799. That same year, two Moravian missionaries passing through recorded that the innkeeper with whom we stopped looked after an apothecary shop as well as the inn. It was here, too, that in May of 1800, John Sevier was said to have tarried for a while. The inn expanded around 1836, the beautiful porch was added in the 1880s, and the business changed hands and names numerous times. The Bell Tavern, where guests knew it was time to come and eat when a large bell was sounded. The Union Hotel during the Civil War, the Planter's House, and then the Jonesboro Inn. The downstairs, which began as Dr. Chester's apothecary shop, also saw many changes. It's been a barber shop, a sandwich shop, a candy shop. Many businesses and offices have been down there, and for a long time, it was home to the Jonesboro Public Library. By the 1950s, the building was showing its age, and a group of people, led by Charles Bennett, remodeled the inn into apartments. This renovation greatly changed the building, but it also helped to save it and give it a new purpose. By 1989, the age was showing again, and that's when the state of Tennessee stepped in and acquired the property. Fortunately, the wonderful people behind the Storytelling Festival were there to care for the building and give it another new purpose as an office building. Today, the Chester Inn State Historic Site and Museum welcomes guests once more with exhibits on the ground level and restored rooms on the second and third floors. It is our privilege and honor as the Heritage Alliance to oversee this current phase of the building's life. When Dr. Chester built the inn those many years ago, he surely could not have foreseen that all these years later, his building would still be standing and it would still be an integral part of the community. When I stand in the building today, I wonder what stories people will tell of it 200 years from now.
Jonesboro has so many buildings that tell a story, large and small. My home is one of them. But when we bought the house, it was a wreck and needed to be gutted.
Everything had to be redone. The whole structure needed new work. New ductwork, new wiring, new everything.
Why didn't you just buy a new house?
That's a good question, Chelsea. The answer is, we like using old stuff and the history of old Jonesboro. We really prefer old over new.
Even if it's a lot of work?
Yes, Chelsea. Remember your favorite blanket? When it was worn and torn, you didn't want me to get you a new blanket. You wanted me to sew your old blanket.
Because it was yellow blankie. I love yellow blankie. We can't get rid of yellow blankie. It's my favorite.
Exactly, exactly. Just like your blankie was your favorite, the house that Deb and Dunn live in, it was once someone's favorite too. Someone built it by hand over 100 years ago.
And even though it didn't start out as our favorite, well, we weren't even born yet when the house was built, but we could see when we looked at it within the structure the love and care that someone had put into it.
Painstakingly put into it, but we'll get to that next.
Once we got the main structural work completed, like the wiring and plumbing, it was time to work on the design. Now, the first thing you have to understand is that we hate sheetrock. So it was our goal to redo the entire house without using sheetrock.
That meant a stop at where I volunteer 2 Saturdays a month during the spring through the fall, the Heritage Alliance Salvage Warehouse. Talk about reuse and recycle. The Salvage Warehouse serves all of the Tri-Cities and the larger Northeast Tennessee and Southwest Virginia region. We offer a wide selection of materials, including bricks, doors, windows, mantels, shutters, flooring, and more. I'm not talking about things that you could find at home remodeling stores. The Salvage Warehouse is filled with items that have come from historic homes in the region and that are being either remodeled and, in some sad cases, taken down. In those instances, we salvaged these items, and we've gotten some really great pieces. My favorite was a huge claw foot bathtub. Oh, and I also love the old stained glass window panels we often get. The salvage warehouse is a great place to go to find items if you're doing a restoration project. We also serve as a place to take donations if you are remodeling and want to pass on a piece of history for someone else to use in their own home. The year that the Burgers were redoing their home, I saw them every other Saturday, all summer long.
We have a 1785 door, oddly proportioned. It won't work in any modern doorway, so it hangs on a wall that had some bad plaster, and it serves as a rotating panel. Deb and I are both artists, and we hang seasonal artwork on it now.
Yeah, it's not the panel that rotates. It's the artwork that's displayed on it. But we also bought an entire porch from an old farmhouse. Spindles, pillars, banisters, balusters. Some were old and worn, and some were quite new looking. We used all of them all over the house. In one area, we had to take down a weight-bearing wall. And we put that old weathered farmhouse pillar there in its place. So that section of the home is held up by something from the 1850s.
We love the history and the look of old wood, so we didn't sand and refinish. We just flaked off what was loose and sealed off what was left. You can just see the life in these old pieces, the life they have lived.
One of the coolest things we discovered in places where we had to take off the old siding, which was in layers. First, there was the plain vanilla vinyl siding, and underneath that was some hideous white asbestos shingle. And the bottom layer, the original, when we got down to the original siding of the house, we discovered, well, we weren't sure what we would find.
What we found was a wooden siding put on in the 1920s that was routed by hand to look like brick. Imagine routing by hand the entire exterior of a home to look like individual bricks.
Yeah, it's stained dark red like brick, and the notches where the grout would be if it really was brick, those have all been painstakingly painted with brush strokes of white. That's the whole siding of the house underneath the asbestos. It's old, though, and it's wooden, and in some places damaged, and we really couldn't strip down and use it. It doesn't have modern vapor barrier and insulation and stuff. But there were places where we had to take it off, so we carefully preserved it, even though we couldn't use it on the outside.
But we really loved the artistry it took to do that. So we took off wood siding from the exterior and used it as the interior kitchen wall. The colors don't all match because they came from different parts of the house that got different light over the years. And that's perfect, too.
I thought it was real brick. I've been over there for dinner many times before I got up close to it one day. I looked really closely and touched it. I was so surprised it wasn't brick. I could see the hand-painted white brush strokes used for the grout. A real artist did that. Then I knew that's why Deb had moved into this house. It was filled with an artist's soul.
We have a friend in salvage in North Carolina, in addition to the Heritage Alliance warehouse here. He gets called to take apart old buildings all over the Southeast. We have a long-standing barter back and forth agreement with him. A few years ago, he took down the Peter Vitale billiard table factory in western North Carolina. They had been a source for handcrafted high-end billiard tables that sold for five figures to upscale clubs and very wealthy people. All the tables had scroll work and fancy carving, partly finished, and it was all left exactly where it was in whatever state of completion the day the factory suddenly closed. We bought several of those pieces, and some of them are now in use in our house.
With billiard tables like this, on the end of the table, on the outside, there's frequently a frieze, a carving under the lip of the table. We have one that was nearly finished, rough at one end with chisel marks, and smooth and finished at the other. It's a beautiful piece of carved wood, and it was almost exactly the width of French doors from somewhere else to our bedroom. And we hung that above the doors.
Our kitchen sink came from Jonesboro, from West Main Street, from the Cox House. It's a huge cast iron painted with porcelain, two big deep wash sinks and a smaller one in the middle, 4 feet wide. Jonesboro homes are distinctive, and we had friends over when we were nearing the end of the restoration, and glimmers of recognition were heard.
Oh, that sink looks familiar. Isn't that the one from the house up the street?
It was recognized right away.
Our bathroom door is an 1840s house door, a panel door with original green milk paint. You need a lock on the bathroom, so we picked up a World War I vintage lock.
Then we got the idea of building a tiny home on the property out back. We had purchased the woods behind us to add on to our lot, part of getting our home back to its original story. Over the years, it had been subdivided, and we were getting it back to the original lot lines on the old plat maps. We talked to Jay Green, the building inspector, about the lot replatting, and then he looked around.
Wow, this would be a great place for a playhouse for the grandchildren.
That clicked. Yeah.
It's perfect, and it's the only place on the property with a mountain view.
So we thought we'd build a tiny house for the grandchildren. We thought we'd build it entirely from old material and pallets.
We thought we could build a playhouse, off the grid, the whole thing, all recycled, a tiny house. Mm-hmm.
We thought, since we'd gotten pretty experienced using old stuff, that we could give it a shot. We ended up with a vast collection of about 100 pallets and doors. But what we found was it's more work to use pallets structurally than we could handle.
We did what we could, but in the end, it ended up mostly new construction, modern construction.
We did buy another door from the Heritage Alliance. The front door and three windows were repurposed, but we had to pay to haul away all those recycled pallets. Live and learn.
What we have in the end, though, is a beautiful home with lots of stories and a friendship garden to go with it. If you want a peek, stop by sometime and we'll show you around.
You two really do have a remarkable home with so many stories. I mean, if only those walls and doors could talk. Anyway, what a story about restoring and renewing and even starting anew. Thanks, Deb and Don, for sharing that all with us.
What's new? Well, let me tell you, being from a military family, we have experience. What's new all the time, don't we, Chelsea?
Yes, I'm always making new friends.
Yes, we never know where we might be stationed next. So our lives are always about what's new. We get used to new foods and new cultures at new places and different places that we go. And we also bring little pieces of those places with us when we leave. Home is where your heart is. And I've left a little piece of my heart in all of the towns we've had a chance to live in. There's always something wonderful to love if you look close enough. I'm always ready for the new adventure waiting for us.
Thanks, Kay. Lori, we've got Dana here with another story. We've heard stories now about what's recycled and what's new. This one falls under the category of what's used.
My family was the proud owners of a turquoise and white Chevy station wagon. This vehicle was the family vehicle in which so many memories were made.
Like piling up blankets in the back and heading to the drive-in theater.
Or fighting over getting to be in the way back on the trips to Florida each summer.
I liked it when we all sang together.
This station wagon was vivid in most of my childhood memories. And as it got older, as we did ourselves, I especially remember what all it took to keep it alive.
What's wrong, Daddy?
I need to stop for another can of oil. This thing needs a can of oil every 100 miles. Oh, no, not rain, too.
What's wrong, Daddy?
Oh, wipers are getting finicky. I have to slap off the wipers to get them working again. I'll just pull over and get out. What now? The door won't open.
I forgot to tell you, dear. The door's having a bit of a problem. You just have to lift the door up a little to open it or close it.
I don't even know why we're still hanging on to this pile of metal. I have half a mind to take it down the road and sell it right now.
No!
All right, then. Well, I gotta make some adjustments at least, because I'm going to be like Fred Flintstone with my feet through the floor just to get it run pretty soon.
Dad wasn't too far off. There were some holes he could have stuck his feet through if he'd pushed hard enough. I remember pushing chicken bones through the rusty floorboard when Mom was driving down the interstate.
You kids, be sure you don't do that once we get closer to our neighborhood.
The thing was, this car was so much a part of us that we actually cried when it finally died and was laid to rest in the backyard. There it sat all autumn long. Then winter came and covered it with snow. But we knew it was there. One day, a few of our buddies were over and we were all sitting around thinking about what to do with the newly fallen snow. We all wanted the sled, but no one had one. And the only hill was right by the interstate. I don't honestly remember who came up with the idea first. All I do remember is my mom saying,
"Interesting. Well, if you can pull it off, I approve. Just don't ask me to help you with that nonsense."
The idea was to give Old Blue, as the station wagon was come to be known, another chance at life. We were going to remove her hood, haul it to a likely hill near the interstate, and all jump on for a trip down. This was much easier in theory, let me say that. Finally, after a lot of tugging and hassles, the hood was removed and flipped on its top. Does anyone remember how solid those early cars were? Not like the Tupperware cars of today. Well, we chained it to the back of a friend's car and crept down the road, stopping periodically to shovel the snow out of it. When we finally got to the hill, we aimed it down, and with incredible anticipation, we all jumped on. What a ride! We smashed every bush in the way as we careened to the bottom. The sheer weight of that hood had us going 80 miles an hour going down, or so it seemed to us, and we did not lose a single man. At the bottom, we all tumbled off into the snow, laughing and shouting, thoroughly relishing in the joys of youth. It's then that we looked at the top of the hill at the car, and at the bottom of the hill at the hood. Someone put into words what we were all thinking. How are we going to get that hood back up that hill again? And that is how Old Blue came to be separated from her hood. It stayed out there in that very spot we left it after sliding down the hill. The snow melted, the grass grew. Over a couple of years, flowers popped up and bloomed in it. Then one day, it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, I guess they finally hauled away that old piece of junk hood away for good.
Dad said the state must have finally come around and picked it up. But my hope is that some teenager somewhere saw in that old hood what we did, and that it's getting a new life with a bunch of kids who haven't forgotten how it is to have fun.
If you ask me, children will always find a way to have fun with something lying around. My granddaughter and my daughter herself have taught me that. They've taught me how to recycle, and they've done a pretty good job of that. I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, my granddaughter had a birthday. She got tons and tons of toys at her birthday party. So many toys that all those children could have played with those toys. Well, her mother and I left to get ice cream and cake. When we came back, every one of those children were in a big box. Now, this was the big box that the kitchen set came in. Now, they weren't playing with the kitchen set. Oh, no. Instead, they were playing in that box, and they were pretending they were in a spaceship, and it was on its way to Mars, and they were having a great old time.
Mom, I can't believe it. If I'd have known that, I would have just gone down to Lowe's and gotten a big old box for her birthday. The kitchen set costs almost as much as my new range.
Kids are great at recycling, but my mother was a recycler. I'm talking about some of the earliest recycling, which we used to call leftovers. My mother could recycle a turkey or a chicken 14 times before she was done with it. It would start out roasted. What we didn't finish that night, she would cut off the bone and make turkey and rice, turkey and dumplings, turkey salad sandwiches, and turkey pot pie. She would save the bones and boil them to make turkey soup. Use the leftover turkey soup to make turkey casserole. Don't even get me started on how many lives her meatloaf had.
I like that kind of recycling.
I've got a huge garden. I mean a huge garden. And I thought that I was producing good stuff until I went to the farmer's market. I had to ask those farmers how they got their vegetables to grow so large and beautiful. And they said, the secret is good composting. So I asked them where I could buy good compost. They laughed at me and said, the best is the kind you make yourself. The people at the farmer's market and the Boone Street market are so helpful. I decided to do what they said and start my own. And they gave me careful instructions to recycle in my kitchen.
Now, you want to start on bare soil. This lets the worms and the other critters aerate the soil that you will transport to the beds that you use the compost in. Then you want to lay down some straw a few inches deep for drainage. Now you can add your composting material. You want to alternate wet and dry, wet and dry. Wet, now this will be food, peels. You can use old tea bags and things like that. Dry ingredients are the things like straw, dried leaves, and wood ash. Be careful though with the wood ash. You want to sprinkle that on and not put it out in clumps because it's harder to break down. Then add some manure or any nitrogen source. This could be things like grass clippings, clover, or wheatgrass. The nitrogen ingredient activates it. It's good to keep a cover over it to keep it moist and also to keep it from being overwatered if you have a lot of rain. Then just go out every few weeks or so and turn it over.
That sounded like something I could do. So these days, I keep a bucket with a lid under my sink. And all that stuff I used to throw in the garbage, which ended up in the landfill, is now going to make the best, darkest compost you could imagine. I'm talking about the tops of vegetables I cut up, onion peels, potato peels. Oh, and make sure it's all vegetable. You don't want to put meat or fish leftovers in the compost. Just give those to Pam's mom. She'll know what to do with them.
I recycle clothing. I love to sew, and I take old clothes that have some meaning to them, and I turn them into quilts. When my friend's father died, she had all these ties he used to wear. She didn't know what to do with them. Some were really old. She just couldn't bring herself to get rid of them. I said, give them to me. It took me a few months, but I made a quilt. It was the prettiest quilt you've seen, using his ties. She keeps it on her bed. She'll pass it down to her child.
What a beautiful idea. There are so many ways to make new use out of old material and make them into meaningful new things. We talked with Jeff Thomas, Director of Solid Waste for Jonesboro, who is also very involved with Keep Jonesboro Beautiful and the recycling efforts in town. Now, this is someone who really is dedicated to making a difference in our community through reuse and recycling. Jeff, I bet you've seen some pretty strange things in the recycling bins around town.
Well, nothing too strange, but the coolest, in my opinion, were a bunch of plastic animal toys, like those little horses, soldiers, and dinosaurs that kids play with. I guess a little boy thought those were the kinds of plastic that we recycle. He wanted to do the right thing, so we put them in the recycling bin. Of course, I took them away. I didn't want to disappoint him. We want to encourage our young people to think like that, and later, once they understand and get a little older, we can teach them the difference between things we can recycle and things we can't. I just feel like if at that age they are already thinking about it, I don't want to do anything to discourage them.
That brings up a good point. I think most of the adults in our community know we have a great recycling program here. But what would you like the community to know about your efforts?
The message I'm trying to convey to everyone is that recycling is good for our environment, today, tomorrow, and in the future. Every ounce, pound, or ton of recycling we keep out of the landfills means less harmful chemicals and greenhouse gases that are released as a result.
And that is so important.
And that is one of the things that led me to be involved with Keep Jonesboro Beautiful.
Which is a completely different program than the recycling program here in town. And, well, we've got some members from Keep Jonesboro Beautiful to tell us all about it.
Keep Jonesboro Beautiful is a nonprofit organization that is an affiliate of Keep America Beautiful and also Keep Tennessee Beautiful. These organizations have been inspiring communities throughout the United States, abroad, and helped to keep communities beautiful. As a result of a better, cleaner community, our town achieves sustainable, tangible results with proven impacts. Education is a big part of our program, and one thing that we like to do is to go into schools and present programs on recycling. We love to inspire and educate the children about the importance of recycling. When we go to the grocery store and a little boy or little girl remembers us coming to their school and giving them a presentation about recycling.
Mr. Jeff, the recycling man.
That's what's so cool. I know that I'm making a difference in their lives. I mean, I remember them, but they remember me, and that's the message and most enjoyable part of my job. And I would ask them, are you recycling at home?
Yes, sir.
And I would say, good job, and we would give each other a high five. That's the best part of my job. Knowing that I'm making a difference, not only now, but for the future. Because the child who is recycling his plastic toys when he no longer plays with them, a little girl picks up water bottles around her playground, and the kids who give me high fives in the grocery store, those are the ones who go home and educate their families.
Don't worry, Mr. Jeff. I'm making sure my mom and dad are doing their part to recycle.
And that's where the real difference is being made. That's the best part of my job.
And so very rewarding. Thank you so much, Jeff, for sharing your story with us to tell us all about this program. Hey! I remember that sound. We haven't heard it for a few episodes, but it sounds like we've got a brand new installment of
Throw Me a Line!
Yes, Throw Me a Line. The time in our show when our cast shares their deep wisdom and thoughts. And to go with our theme tonight, we've made new 21st century definitions out of some words whose, well, Webster's roots we thought could use some updating.
This one is especially true today, coming off of a holiday. The word is adult. An adult is a person who has stopped growing at both ends and is now growing in the middle.
Beauty parlor, a place where women curl up and die.
A cannibal, someone who's fed up with people.
Chicken, the only animals you eat before they're born and after they're dead.
The committee. Well, that's the body that keeps the minutes but wastes the hours.
Dust. That would be mud with the juice squeezed out of it.
Raisin, a grape that missed the chance to become wine, which is why it looks so shriveled and sad.
Egotist, that is someone who is usually knee-deep in conversation.
Inflation, that's cutting money in half without damaging the paper.
Handkerchief, I got this.
A handkerchief is something for cold storage.
Tomorrow, one of the greatest labor-saving devices of today.
Hey, wait a minute. That's a true definition. I've used it myself.
All right, we've got a special story tonight that starts with one of the leaders over at the Youth Villages in Johnson City. We talked with Leanne Blitch about what it's like to work with a foster care service, which brings new life into homes across the region and across the state. We were really interested in how she got involved in foster care in the first place.
When I was in college, I did an internship at a juvenile detention center. I really enjoyed the kids and cared a lot about them. But it made me wonder, how could this have been prevented? I didn't know the complete answer, of course, but I knew the biggest factors. Two words, education and parenting. Well, after college, I joined a nonprofit called Teach for America, and I taught seventh grade for 3 years in a low-income community, working with at-risk kids. That's the experience that led to what I'm doing today, recruiting and training foster parents.
What is the foster care story you have dealt with that makes you feel like you were grateful you never gave up trying?
Well, Tom, any time a child gets placed in a home where I know they will be safe and loved, well, it's then that I feel grateful I do this work. You know, lots of people can offer safety to a child, but not everybody can offer love in a true home. So I make it a point to look for parents who will genuinely love and care for a child. I remember there was a girl who had moved from home to home at least 4 times in a short period. The foster parents in those homes had passed her along to one family after another, all for different reasons. Well, there was a lady who was going through my training classes to become a foster parent, and as soon as I met her, I knew she was the perfect mom for this girl. There were other families who wanted to foster her, but I was determined to do my absolute best to make sure this foster mom was chosen. And it worked out. This foster mom loves this girl as her own. Because she is truly loved and cared for, the child is recovering from so many hurts of the past, and she's now in the process of being adopted. I am extra grateful that this special mom believes in education and has the faith and perseverance that truly makes a foster parent extraordinary.
What would you like people to know about the children in youth villages?
Well, our children need love. They need strong, persistent parents who are willing to go the extra mile for them, to advocate for them, to treat them as a valuable person. Many children who have been in foster care have suffered trauma, as they have been through something that required them to be taken away from their home. It's hard on them. Many of them are teenagers. Many of them have been abused, and many of them require special attention. No child is a lost cause. Every child can be helped and given a good home and love.
What breaks your heart?
It breaks my heart when I see someone who was raised without a stable home or wasn't given a fair shot in life. Maybe they're older and no one wanted them. Maybe they had some aggression issues that no one had the patience to deal with. Maybe they had a safe place to sleep, but didn't have any nurturing or good role models to follow. As they get older, they lack a family. They lack resources, good decision-making skills, life skills, and education. So they take a path that can often lead to crime, homelessness, negative peer association, and poverty. Often the cycle repeats itself. Chances are, this could have all been prevented given a different upbringing. That's why I'm so dedicated to what I do.
There are so many children out there who just want to be loved. They just want to have a loving home to grow up in. Some of them have already done a lot of growing up, no matter their age, because of their circumstances. You know, I think I probably know the answer to this, but who do you think are the hardest young people to place?
Often older children are harder to place. People have misconceptions about what it's like to parent an older child. For example, in my job as a recruiter, I hear a lot of people say things like, older kids have too much damage. Older kids are more violent. Older kids have more issues. But older children are more independent. They understand the transitioning that's happening to them. And they are often so much more grateful for a loving home because they know where they've been. And the teenage years are critical because they only have a short time to get a family. They only have a short time to learn life skills. A foster parent can give that to a teenager. It is never too late to be loved. And it is never too late to learn to love someone.
So I guess you could say I'm a used kid. That's what one of my foster parents said about me. They were joking. I laughed, even though it wasn't funny. Not to me, anyway. But I didn't want to do anything to make them not like me. It didn't work out, anyway. I was 8 then. I thought I was still young enough for someone to want me. But my foster family found out they were having a baby of their own. They worried there wouldn't be enough money to take care of all of us. Since I wasn't their own, I got placed somewhere else.
You're a sweet, sweet girl. I know you understand. We want to make sure you're with a family who can support you.
But you know, you can always come and visit us.
Why would I want to visit people who don't love me?
We do love you.
Just not enough to keep me. Yes, I understand. I should have kept my mouth shut. My foster parents told my caseworker what I said, and then I was marked down as verbally aggressive, and I got put in another category. We're categorized, you know? All of us foster kids in the system. When people shop for us, they want a young child who doesn't have any problems. But I look at it this way. If I need a home because my parents can't take care of me, I come with a big problem. Another problem none of us can avoid is that while we wait for our forever families, we don't stay 8 years old. I was almost 10 when my family had a child of their own and sent me back into the system. You might think, okay, 9, that's still young enough. But at 9, I had a growth spurt and got taller than most 11-year-olds I knew. Before I even got in the 4th grade, I realized I was already too old for someone to love. People don't go for 10-year-olds or 11-year-olds, and especially teenagers, when they shop for kids.
Sweetheart, nobody shops for you.
We have good people who work with us, counselors and social workers and things like that. They tell us things like, nobody is shopping for you. But come on. Our files get looked at. They look at our pictures, look at our ages. It's like Amazon. I got my picture taken, and I wanted to look as pretty as I could. I thought, if I'm pretty enough, someone will think they could maybe love me. But as you get taller, your chances get shorter.
My husband and I wanted to have children, but we'd given up and resolved that being parents just wasn't meant to be.
I think we both wanted to have children. I knew my wife really wanted to. I remember the day we talked and said, okay, no more test tubes. No more medical trials. We've tried and tried, and it still isn't happening. We both cried together over that weekend, and we came out of it feeling stronger, together, knowing it was a mutual decision.
I can't explain what happened next. It was a bit later, not too long, and we had finally let go of the idea of having children when I started seeing these signs everywhere. Now, I don't mean mystical signs like the Virgin Mary in a Cheeto. I mean signs, yard signs, red and white, with youth villages written on them.
I was seeing them, too, on my way to work and around town. It was weird. Either they weren't there before, or I'd never noticed them. But I was noticing them now. I didn't tell my wife about it.
I didn't tell my husband about it.
I just kept seeing them and reading the small print now, which said, become a foster parent.
And in all the time we thought about having children, the thought never occurred to me that we could be parents to a child who already needs a family.
I was afraid to bring it up at first because when we made the decision to stop trying, it was really hard on both of us. But something kept pulling at me.
Something kept telling me, talk to him about this.
There's something, I need to tell you. You first.
I don't know how to say this, but what if we could be parents to someone who needs us? Someone we could love.
Someone already waiting to be loved?
We were amazed that we'd both been thinking the same thing. We went for training to be foster parents. And after we were certified, I turned to my husband and said, listen, if we were to have a child together, and if that was able to happen, we wouldn't have the choice of a boy or girl. We would receive with love whatever God had in mind for us.
Yes.
And I believe God has someone in mind for us. And I believe this is what we're led to do.
I do too.
And I don't want to pick and choose. I believe the first person that is put in our path is the one God has chosen for us to become a brand new family.
I believe that too.
I'll never forget the day. It was only a week after we were certified and the phone rang. Hello? Why, yes, we are ready. Where should we meet you?
We got the address of where to go.
Mr. and Mrs. Allison, this is Rebecca.
Congratulations, sweetheart. It's a girl.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm tall for my age. I'm only 11. I know I'm a used kid,
oh,
but...
Oh, Rebecca,
I'm probably a little older than you wanted. I've never been a parent before, and I'm just a little bit nervous I won't be good enough at it.
Both of us. But if you'll give us a chance.
And that's how I went from being a used kid to a brand new kid with a brand new family. Sometimes our stories do have happy endings. I'm so happy in my new home, but I wonder about my friend Demetrius. He was 17 and still waiting when I found my home. He deserves a happy ending too. None of us asked to be where we're at. We want what everyone else wants, to be loved and to love someone back. I got lucky. I got a new start. I hope Demetrius gets a new start too.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, the Tennessee Arts Commission, those Wild Women of Jonesboro, Nancy Hope and Odie Major, and Main Street Cafe and Catering.
And we'd like to especially thank you, our listening audience. Be sure to tune in on the last Wednesday of the month at 8 p.m. on 89.5 FM WETS to hear our program, or listen online to WETS.org on HD Channel 1.
Good night, everyone.
new beginnings, new life, transformations. These stories aren't just for this month. They're the stories of our circle of life, never ending. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight.
The Jonesboro Yarn Exchange. Jonathan Baker, Deb Berger, Don Berger, Summer Buchanan, Roger Cassell, Lee Clements, Susan Cox-Burke, Phyllis Fabozzi, Chelsea Gunnell, Kay Gunnell, Stephen Goodman, Kay Grog, Marcy Holly, Sadie Hyatt, Marianne Yeager, Dana Kez, David Kez, Angie Fellers Mason, Ashley Marcus, Brett McCluskey, Lori Olmsted, Pam Overbay, Maggie Polden, Nancy Ray, Perry Rogers, Katie Rosalowski, Tom Sizemore, Vivi von Voigtlander, Anna Van Eaton, Joel Van Eaton, Claire Winkler, and Joseph Winkler. We'd like to thank Mountain States Health Alliance and the Tennessee Arts Commission for their support for this program.